Hey, 2019 is upon us, and that means you need to go to leadingsaints.org and get the 2019 Ward Calendar. This is a huge wall calendar that shows every day of the year and does a fantastic job in the bishop's office, in the ward clerk's office, or even on the ward bulletin board. Go check it out at leadingsaints.org and order one today. Welcome back to the Leading Saints podcast. My name is Kurt Frankum, and as always, I will be your host. If you're new to Leading Saints, we welcome you. I'm glad you found this platform, and we have 300 plus episodes that I invite you to peruse through and thousands of articles online that will hopefully help you be a better prepared lay leader in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, in this episode is a fun one because it's probably the episode where I've had the most attractive lady I've ever interviewed, and that is my wife.
Oh, I hope so.
Here she is. She's here right with me. We just finished recording this episode. What do you think, Alana? How did it go?
I think it will be good. I hope that it can really help somebody out there.
And now, why would I bring my wife on the podcast? One thing is she's wonderful and has great perspective, but she has experience of being a bishop's wife. And I'll talk more about this in the actual recording, but we are going to focus a few episodes in the coming weeks about being the wife of a bishop or being the wife of a leader in a prominent role. And this may relate well to those that are married to a Relief Society president as well, the husband of a Relief Society president. There's just these dynamics of being married to somebody in a high-profile leadership role that are worth talking about. And we talk about them, and it'll be awesome. My wife has such great points, and you did a wonderful job.
Thank you.
All right. So here is my interview with Alana Frankum. Today, I'm sitting in my kitchen with my wife, Alana Frankum. How are you, Alana?
Hi. Good.
Nice. Now, this is unique. You're on the podcast.
Yep.
How do you feel about that?
I don't know yet.
We'll see how this goes, huh?
Yep.
So, what would you say to the audience? What do they need to know about you? What's your background? What makes you Alana? I mean, I could answer this question, but I'll try not to answer these questions for you.
What makes me Alana?
Yeah. What's your background?
All right. Well, I am the oldest of seven kids, and I grew up in outside of Blackfoot, Idaho. And I was raised in the church. And what else do you want to know?
You're a massage therapist.
Yep. So I went through high school and I went to BYU, Idaho for a year, and I decided I want to be a massage therapist.
And I'm so glad she's decided that because it brought her to Utah.
So it brought me to Utah, and I went through massage school, and after I finished massage school, after a year or so, I ended up meeting Kurt down here in Utah.
We met in a YSA ward.
Yep.
In the Salt Lake Community College Institute building where we met, right?
Yep.
Nice. And anything you would add? How did we meet? How would you articulate that experience in just a few minutes?
All right. Well, I was just in the back of the line to get some food right after church. I think it was called a Linger Longer.
Linger Longers. They work.
Kurt walked up to get back in line by me, and we started chatting, and we ended up sitting together as we ate, and he asked me if I wanted to go, was it country dancing?
No, I think I just asked if I could call you sometime or something.
Yeah,
or something. Should go do something. Because then I called you and asked you to go dancing.
Yeah, because you knew that I liked to country dance. And
you did not know that I didn't like to country dance. But
I did not know that.
But that's what we did. We went dancing.
But after our first date, I could tell that you weren't very experienced country dancing.
Come on.
But I still held on to you. Nice. I didn't let that.
there were other positives that outweighed
deter me too much.
That. Yeah.
Nice. And
we got married.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell them the other part
of
the story.
Go ahead.
So he did say that he would call me as he walked away because he
The first time we met.
Met at the Linger Longer, he had to go because he was serving at that time as assistant to the Elders Quorum President. Isn't that right?
No, I was assistant Elders Quorum President, not assistant to the... No, I'm just kidding. I don't remember. It was kind of a strange calling.
It was a strange calling. And you had to go off and do something for that calling.
Very important stuff.
So you, before you left, you said, okay, I'll call you. And I was like, oh, well, don't you want my number?
And little did she know, I had been stalking her because I saw her. My first time I saw Alana Pilatus was at the FHE activity where we played volleyball. And this cute curly haired brunette girl was there. And I thought, ooh, what's her name? And so I went through the entire online word directory. It was very archaic back then, where it would show like 10 photos at a time and I'd hit next, next. And I went through all the pictures until I found your picture. And I was like, Alana Pilatus, like, who is this? What sort of name is that? And little did I know that I would know that name well.
Yeah.
And so I already had your phone number.
Yep. But he still.
And so I sort of like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. What's your number? And I acted like I put it in my phone. And
but now that we look back at it and can tell that story, it was very sweet and endearing that he already had my number before he even met me.
Nice.
So.
And then since then, we got married in January of 2006. January 13th.
So that was in July.
Friday the 13th.
Yeah. We met in July and we got married in January.
We're so, I'd say we're so Mormon, but we're so Latter-day Saints, whatever that means, right?
Well, yeah.
Short engagement, but we knew it.
We dated quite a bit before that and it just felt right and it still feels right. So I think.
No, I remember a significant, just a click in our connection from that time that we talked at the Linger Longer. And I thought, man, this there's something different happening here and this is exciting. And now we have two kids.
And I remember when you showed up on my doorstep, take me out the first time, I thought, oh, wow, like my date's pretty good looking.
I'll go on.
No, seriously, I still have like a picture in my brain of you on my front porch.
The angels descending, the heavens opening. And you thought, here he is, my eternal mate, right?
So, it was a pretty smooth process. I know not all are like that, but our experience was pretty good.
And now let's see, January 13th, our anniversary will be 14 years?
I think it's just 13.
13 years.
But when you start getting up into the teens, it's hard to keep track.
I know, we're getting
that stage.
So it was
06.
06, so yeah.
So 13. 13,
yep. So 13 years, we have two kids and hopefully more kids to come. But this will maybe is for a different podcast, but we got married sort of like, we want to have a lot of kids, like seven. You come from a family of seven. I come from a family of four. But I was like, man, I'd like the dynamics of your family with seven kids. I was like, let's shoot for that. And we went through years of infertility. Went through, I think we've had six miscarriages at this point. One is
five.
One is recently is a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we really want to have more kids. But
you even went through the adoption process.
Oh, yeah. I need to do an episode on adoption, but that's a whole nother story. But we were picked to be placed with a child the same week we found out we were pregnant, and that pregnancy worked out, and that's our 6-year-old. And now
adoption didn't happen. For long story short,
it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Anyways, a story for another time. But we really want to have more kids. But the two kids we have are just, man, they're just, I just love them. They're wonderful. But we would really like to have more kids. So pray for us out there, audience. Hopefully we can announce future kids in the coming year, 2019. Hopefully.
That's the year. Anyways,
That's us. And we have a lot of stuff we want to go over. So, I'm sure people can rent our documentary another time and learn all about us. But that's the gist of it. And obviously, the reason that brings us to these microphones today is this is an interview I've been wanting to have for a long time because there are.
He's been asking me for a while. And this was totally impromptu.
Like, we were not planning on it today. But I thought, I just released a survey online for a few weeks ago. I released a survey for current and former bishops' wives to take because I want to create some content around the dynamic of being the wife of a bishop or the wife of a prominent leader in the church because they're often forgotten. It's just the nature of the beast, I guess. And nobody knows the tears of the bishop's wife like the bishop's wife and the bishop. And I think it's important to shine light on that. And so this is a How I Lead episode, but in the context of how I lead as the bishop's wife.
Yeah, since you've had this platform for a couple of years, I've been thinking, need some content around that. But it's just like, what do you say? And, it's definitely, I feel like it's...
And so I put this interview together. We have about almost 40 responses there, and some of these are really good. And so I hope in the next few months, there's going to be a few episodes like this. I'm sort of trying to figure out if I should do, you know, one episode with multiple stories or just focus on one story. But this will sort of be our kickoff of some of these Bishop's Wife interviews I have coming up. And I think this will be really helpful for newly called bishops, for their wives and obviously themselves to listen to maybe prepare themselves for some of the realities, some of the difficult parts of being a bishop's wife, the family dynamics that go on with this. And it's easy for outsiders to look at the bishop's family and think, wow, look at that family. They just have it all together. And that's not always the case. And there's good times and bad times. And of course, yes, we were abundantly blessed when I served as bishop in the stake presidency. But there were a lot of times where the argument was about the calling. And we got through it, right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of the topics you've been focusing on in this platform is like, you know, the ability to leaders to serve like outside. But it would be good to have more content of building the family when you're in the midst of serving in the church, like building up the family, like, you know.
Yeah, perfect. All right. So maybe we'll start out with some of these questions. Well, let's go back, as I typically do in the How I Lead segment, is I've asked you to prepare four or five leadership principles related to this calling. And though it's not like an official in the handbook calling, it is absolutely a calling. Wouldn't you say like you felt like it was a calling when you were the wife of the bishop?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely like a way different dynamic, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And so we've got some great principles and this is going to be some fantastic content and a real discussion. We may weep at parts. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. So what do you remember about me being called as bishop? And what do you remember about the thoughts that went through your mind when that happened? What led up to me being called as bishop?
Well, like we kind of knew it was coming. Our previous bishop was being called into the stake presidency. And when we were in stake conference, we both kind of looked at each other and we were like, huh, okay. Like we...
I was the high priest group leader at the time, so yeah. I was definitely on the list, right, of options.
Yeah, yeah. So, I was actually, we hadn't yet had any kids. So
because we were in the midst of infertility at that point. I mean, we had probably had three or four miscarriages by that point.
Yeah, so, but, and I was at work when Kurt called me and said, hey, we got to go into the state presidency's office. And I was... with the feelings that I had in that moment when I was at work, when Kurt called me, were kind of excitement and like just anticipation of what lies ahead for us. And, you know, like the opportunity to serve when he was so young just seemed like, wow, like cool and exciting. And that we could, yeah, I love the opportunities that we have in the church to serve, even though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at that point, it seemed exciting, but that wasn't always, you know, like it wasn't always just exciting, but. Yeah.
And for sure, the call came and any thoughts on, I mean, that you'd add to that, that it was just sort of excitement, like sort of like getting married, like, oh, our lives are changing. This is all new. And there's sort of this excitement just because it's new, right?
Yeah. And we didn't have, you know, since we didn't have kids, there wasn't like that, like, oh, like. How's this going to change? Like, you know, like we'd still, yeah. It was
so exciting. Generally speaking, before we dig into some of these leadership principles, how would you describe the state of our marriage during the time that I served as bishop? Just generally speaking.
When you were serving as bishop, I would say, gosh, that was kind of a long time ago.
It's not that long ago, but.
I would say like really good. Although what we've had, like, you know, we've just like any other couple, like we go through periods of times where like we struggle and, you know, like we argue a little bit more than other times. I don't remember though.
Yeah.
I honestly don't remember about when you were bishop, but like in the beginning, I think pretty good. I was actually serving in the Relief Society presidency when he got called. And so it was actually just really awesome, because we were both super involved in our ward and we both felt like just really, which helped.
You felt needed, right?
Yeah, we felt needed and we grew a lot and there was lots of needs in our ward. And so the beginning, when you were first called as bishop, it was probably like
the best time of the 5 years.
No. Yeah. The first part was the best of the 5 years that you served as bishop. Yeah. The beginning was like the easiest and, you know, kids came along and their dynamics that we had to work through later on. And it became harder. And
as we talk here, we're sort of grouping my time as a bishop along with my time in the state presidency, because I was released as a bishop to go into the state presidency. Mm-hmm. And there are certain dynamics that were unique and some that were the same in both of those callings. So how would you describe the general dynamics, good and bad? I mean, that you remember that, you know, obviously I had meetings to go to, and maybe you just focus on the time when we had kids. Because when we didn't have kids, it was more simplified and maybe mm-hmm. easier to take on.
Yeah. So before you actually served as bishop, we actually considered like, oh, when should we move? You know, because we just lived in a condo that was two bedrooms. And when we originally moved there, we thought, oh, we'll just be here for a couple years and then we'll move on. Yeah. We actually ended up being there a total of 10 years. And so he served as the bishop for 5 years and then the stake presidency for 2 years. So towards the end of, as we were in that stake, towards the end, I was just feeling lots of different emotions because of life, how the fact that we were still in this condo, we had two kids and we wanted to grow our family. And
we just didn't envision ourselves in a condo 10 years later, right?
Yeah. Wanted to grow our family in, but we were on the third floor and just a bunch of other things. And then a lot of our friends had moved from the ward that we were living in. And so it felt like a whole new ward. Like when you got released as the bishop and then called into the state presidency, all of a sudden it felt like I was in like a new ward because our ward is so transient. And so when he was in the state presidency, it's a whole different dynamic because I was going with our two kids to church by myself, like, because he would be going to other wards in the stake. And so I just, you know, lots of things compounded. I found myself just kind of in this state of kind of like a low state in my life. And
yeah. And I sense just even during my time as bishop, and it was sort of magnified when I was in the state presidency, you'd go through these phases of, how would you describe your experience with depression? I mean, do you feel like it's not like you've never necessarily been medicated or seen a counselor consistently, but you've sort of had bouts with this, right?
Yeah. I guess in the past, some people have called it like seasonal depression, but it's not like with the change of the seasons, like the winter or anything. It's just,
yeah.
When I find myself in a certain circumstances that are a lot more difficult, it's easy to, you know, have that kind of come up.
Yeah.
So,
and I'd see you go through these lulls of depression, and that's something that I've never really experienced to any degree, mm-hmm. Which I'm grateful for because I have so much empathy for those that do wrestle with that. It's real, and it's hard for me to relate it sometimes, but I want to have as much empathy as possible. So you go through these lulls where it was just like nothing in life could pull you out of it, right? It was just like, you know, you go about your day-to-day chores, but it was just like, or your day-to-day life. But it was just like, man, I'm just here doing chores. And then when we have kids, it's like, man, here I am at home another Tuesday night with the kids. And, you know, where's Kurt? I don't know, like doing his bishop thing. And it would sort of just, it would magnify some of these feelings, where other times it'd be like, yeah, it's not great, you know, being home alone on Tuesday nights while you'd go to your meetings, but whatever, I'll handle it, right?
Yeah, I definitely was. It was really hard for me to show up the way I wanted to. Like, you know, I wanted to be super supportive and I wanted to just like you to come home. And I just, you know, like you'd come home, or I guess you weren't at that time, you worked at home, but, you know, I wanted to, you know, have dinner ready so you could go off to your meetings and then you'd come home and then we'd spend like a few minutes together, you know, just like, you know, just be really supportive and be there for you. But like
other times you did not have the strength to be that person, right?
Yeah. Like I really wanted to pull out of that, but yeah.
Yeah. And there was times that you did see some counselors and that helped, but a lot of times you just didn't know. And it wasn't debilitating as it is, you know, depression can be very debilitating for individuals, but for you, you were sort of able to just get through your day, but it was just hard. You're just in a funk, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's just how it was. And that sometimes I'd come home and be like, okay, I guess we're suddenly arguing. Like, what's happening here? Like, I just had this great experience at the church and I'm meeting with these people. We're reading scriptures. The Spirit's there. And then I come home and my wife hates me. Like, what is happening? Right. And looking back on that, I just think, you know, I think I handle it pretty well for the most part. Maybe you disagree with me, but we just sort of got through it. But, and I was sort of in this phase of like, okay, like, I've been fixing people at church all day. Now I got to fix my wife. All right, what's wrong? Like, let's talk about it. And there was really nothing I could do. It was just, you're going through sort of that seasonal phase and you eventually, most of the time, you know, 80% of the time you're out of it. And generally speaking, it was, you know, good times, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, the first leadership principle you listed here was share experiences.
Mm-hmm. So we came up with that principle because you asked me, okay, if somebody was just being called to be a bishop, what advice would you give to, you know, him and his wife? And that would be to, you know, talk as much as you can and take the time to talk as much as you can, sharing as much as you can without,
you know, breaking confidences.
Breaking confidences. Because I think that you being involved can bring a lot of joy and help the process be better, and you can grow in that experience together. And one thing that I really like about the church is that we are called into these positions and there's lots of learning that we can experience and lots of growth that we can experience in these callings. But when your husband is called to be the bishop, he's experiencing, I feel like it's a little bit easy for him to experience more growth than for you to experience, because you're just at home taking care of the kids or whatever phase of life you're in.
Yeah.
You're just at home. You're not necessarily getting as much growth as he is. And so to just try to be involved as much as you can. And then for him to be able to share with you will help just the connection that you have with each other. And
yeah, because when you serve in these leadership callings as a bishop or in a stake presidency, like, growth and spiritual experiences are served to you on a platter. Like, just take it. There it is. Like, when you're in an office or in a meeting and you are having, I mean, you are literally watching the atonement from the sidelines, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember leaving some of those meetings just like on cloud nine, like, oh my goodness, like, I have just felt a deep connection with divinity and I just feel so good. And then you walk in and like my wife's on the third round of Toy Story 2 and the child's crying and she's looking at you like, and where you really have, as far as the spiritual experience, like you have to seek it out. I mean, just like every lay member, right? That it's all about the scripture study and scheduling. So you have those spiritual experiences. And so I think what you're saying is like by me coming home and sort of attempting to articulate what I just experienced, I brought some of that spirit with me.
Yeah. Also, if you're struggling with letting your husband go at night when you'd really like to be with him, if you're really struggling with that, it's really helpful to be aware of like things that, you know, that he's doing, the people that he's serving, because if you're aware of that, then, you know, like, of course, like if I knew what that person was going through and that they needed help, of course I would want to help them. But if I'm not aware of, like, you know, it's hard to let him go if you're not really aware of.
Yeah. To really see things, that purpose that he has.
The purpose. Yeah. It's hard for me to articulate what I'm trying to say.
No, but I think you're doing great. I think you're doing wonderful.
Yeah. To really know what the purpose, like, what's the purpose of not letting him, but being okay with, you know, letting him get into a suit and go out the door.
We call it my Superman cape, or sometimes I'd say, I just have to get my Superman cape and go. I can't tell you anymore.
Right? Yeah. And I would just, you know, try to remember during those times that like there's somebody out there that really needs him. And that like, and I have seen, like, I've seen like the things that you've said to people that have really made a difference. And so I know that you're going out anyway.
Yeah. And I think that's great. I mean, again, we're not saying that you should break confidences, and there you have so much room to talk generally about these things, right? You don't have to say, oh, Sister Jones came in and, well, her marriage is a mess and let me tell you about it and how we work through it. I mean, but just saying like, man, I sat down with this sweet sister tonight and she was hurting so bad and I didn't know, I sat there thinking, I didn't know where to go and what to tell her. And then we started, we opened the scriptures and we came across the scripture and, you know, sweetheart, let me share the scripture with you. Right. And not that we would get like this intense every time, but sometimes you just come home with the weight of the world on your shoulders. And I think it's really beneficial that you give yourself license to some degree to just share some of those feelings you experience without putting in a certain context and just saying, wow, you know, like I have felt, I remember many times coming home after meeting with a couple who's just wrestling with their marriage and talking divorce and things and just saying, Elena, I just want you to know how much I appreciate our marriage. And I really didn't know how good we had it, or yeah, we have bad times, but I just want you to know that we're doing really well. And just having that connection as a couple, like strengthen us, and you'd maybe ask questions or, and it would just get us talking. Right. So as the bishop, like bringing home those feelings and try and share that spirit that you have been bathing in for the last few hours, like bring it home and share it the best way you can. And not just feel like, well, I can't, you know, I can't talk any about anything. So don't ask me. And, you know, why isn't the dinner ready? And, you know, that, but to really look for opportunities to share experiences.
Yeah.
Anything else around that principle that we haven't covered?
I think we got it.
Okay. The other principle you said is making it a family calling.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it kind of ties into the first principle. When he was first called as bishop and I was in Relief Society presidency, it was a lot easier to make it a family calling because I remember there was actually times where there would be somebody that really needed a visit and we'd actually go do visits together as Relief Society presidency and bishop.
Or you would just be my wife as well that was concerned and with me.
Yeah. And so it was a little bit harder to do that when we had kids. But, you know, if you don't have kids, take it, you know, that taking advantage of, you know, going out once, you know, to do visits with your husband. When you actually go out and do the visits, it's so rewarding, I feel like, when you go visit people. And if not, just communication and just kind of thinking about the question of like, what kind of bishop's wife do I want to be? Or, you know, we can also
like how involved, not that you have to go do visits, but that's a great like discussion to have as a couple, like during month one, you know, what, how do we want to make this a family calling and what can we do to make it a family calling? And early on for us, it was those visits, right? And that's such a simple, like, and everybody, I've not met one leader who says, I hate visiting. Like typically it's like, I hate all the other stuff because I can't go visiting when I do that other stuff. Like I love being in people's homes. And by doing that as a couple, it's like you grow together in that calling, right? And people open up to you just like they open up to me, right? As their leader. And I was going to mention that even if you have kids as a couple, like being intentional of maybe like once a month or once a quarter, whatever works out for you, like getting a sitter or asking one of the young women in the ward to come over and watch the kids and then going out with your husband and ministering. Because you will find that you will just cherish those moments. And it's like the best of date nights, you know, even though we're not like at a movie or at dinner, but, you know, in between as we're traveling places, like you grow together and it allows you to sort of open that door to your calling a little bit like, oh, you know, we need to go visit Sister, you know, Hughes because she's, you know, struggling with this or she had a recent fall or whatever. And you're like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, you know, so it sort of forces you to have some of those conversations and connect. And then you feel so involved and that involvement does a world of difference when, yeah, some of those weeks you're just home watching Toy Story 2 for the 10th time.
Yeah, right? For sure. Definitely.
Another thing I want to mention with this as far as making the family calling and, okay, tangent real quick, but if there's a stake presidency listening, like, or stake president, like if I was a stake president, when you sustain that family in sacrament, or when you sustain that individual in the sacrament, like invite at some point, you know, you don't have to do it during the sustaining, but at some point invite the family to stand up and maybe during the sustaining, you know, ask that for the new bishop to stand up and then invite the family to stand up and then take the sustaining vote. Cause like that could be such a model, such a visual for the ward to see that we're not asking, you know, Billy James to serve as the bishop. We're asking his family to serve as the bishop's family because it is a family calling, right? Mm-hmm. So that little gesture can, I think, do so much and mean so much for the family and sort of empower the family as, man, the, you know, the stake president asked us and, you know, if you have a 14-year-old, wow, I'm stood up. Like this is us. This is us as a family that's going to serve this ward. It's not just, all right, my dad has this new calling, right? But the other thing I was going to mention as far as making it a family calling, like looking for simple little traditions that really add to it. So for example, I remember Devery, who's now six, she was 2, 3 when I was serving as bishop. And we had this little thing that during the closing song, she was allowed to come up and sit on my lap. Mm-hmm. And she would, every Sunday, yeah, she would know, like she'd hear the room start singing. She'd look at you and you'd nod. And I just have these sweet, sweet moments, memories in my head of seeing that little Devery run up to the stand and sit on my lap.
During the intermediate hymn, it was a little tricky. I'd have to be like, nope, not yet.
Not the closing song yet, right? But she would just run up and sit on my lap. And I wanted her to do that because I wanted her to have memories of her running up to the podium and sitting on my lap. And, you know, we would, you know, obviously finish the hymn and then there would be closing song. And then she would be in my arms or I would be holding her hand as I would be greeting people. And so I wanted her to remember these times when her father served, right? And so just those little traditions. And I remember, I mean, around Christmas time, which we were in a ward with so much need. We had so many Sub for Santas. Mm-hmm. And I remember our living room full of presents. And remember, mm-hmm, Devery would just be, yeah, like, oh my goodness, are these all for me? And it gave us opportunity to say, well, no, like as a bishop, people are bringing these presents to my house and then we're going to go take them to families. Or we have people that are going to come pick them up and take them to families. Like, just finding those little simple traditions or habits or routines that you can add in that will imprint these memories in your children's mind. Because I remember as a 5-year-old when my father served as bishop, like I just remember some of those little things like that impacted me later on as a leader that helped me serve more valiantly, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but the little traditions that I think is helpful. The other thing you put is the third principle is finding connection.
Yeah. We kind of talked about that a little bit again because they're all kind of intertwined.
Well, yeah, that's fine.
But yeah, so when you were in the stake presidency, it was really important to me, for me to find connection because for one, like I was basically like a single mom on Sundays. Mm-hmm. You know, I would, you know, you would leave and I would have to get the kids to church and I'd be at church by myself and then come home and be like, okay, you know, we'd both be home later on that day and we'd say, okay, well, how was your church day? Because it was, you know, we were definitely like, we didn't even see each other except for once in a while, even with my little kids, I would go to the ward that Kurt was visiting. And that was nice to do sometime. And I had served in a stake calling previously. So like, it was nice because I didn't know a few people. So it wasn't like I was just showing up to a ward. I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
Like I knew a few people. So that was nice. But yeah, so going back to, so it was really important for me to find connection because a lot of, you know, our ward was really transient and it was, you know, finding connection with people in my ward and letting them like help me. And then also finding a connection with the other wives in the stake presidency and with the stake presidency. And so it was really fun that we would actually get together a lot as families in the stake presidency. And then we'd also like have lunch together.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You and all the wives of the stake presidency, like was it every month or, yeah, or so, just whenever you would, I mean, it's pretty regular
to do
though.
It like once a month,
but you all would just go out to lunch and, mm-hmm, just do your woman thing of chit chat and, you know, eating salad and all, yeah, that stuff. Right.
Yeah. And we'd also do a, like bishop's wives night. And so like the stake presidency's,
yeah, that was
wives
a great idea,
would like the stake president's wife, she would have all of the bishop's wives and sometimes even the counselor's wives of the bishop
in each bishopric. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Over. And we would like do something for them. One of the funnest things that we did was that we went and video, like we set an appointment up with each bishop in the ward. And then we videoed them and it had them like ask them questions about their wife and like had them like do a video.
Yeah, it was like the newlywed game, right? Where you'd ask random questions about, you know, what's your favorite thing to do for a date night or whatever. And
yeah, well, but their wife wouldn't know that we were doing this. And right. Then we would show the video to them when we got together,
yeah,
all together. And it was really fun because we'd say we'd ask the bishops like, you know, what do you love most about your wife? Or, you know, just things like that. And yeah, that just, it's So that was fun.
Yeah. Connection was so huge for you. I remember the relationship you have with some of my past counselors in the bishopric. Like, you cherish those relationships today. I mean, and they were so important to you. And I can't stress enough, like, the importance of a bishop just being, like, forcing himself to be aware of the connection that his counselors' wives are having with either each other or in the ward, or just focusing on, like, maintenance of those relationships, because there, I guarantee you, there are relationships and bishoprics across the world where your counselor's marriage is falling apart and you don't even know about it because that counselor's too ashamed to bring it up, and he wants to be, you know, a diligent servant and say yes to things and be there for his calling, right? But his marriage is falling apart because their wife is then resenting the bishop for demanding all this time, and the bishop just like, oh no, we're just meeting and doing our thing. You know, he doesn't realize that he's asking so much of that marriage.
Yeah. And sometimes, and we'll honestly, like, when you would go to your presidency meetings, you guys had such a, you as a presidency had such a, you know, great dynamic. Like,
yeah, we were really connected,
really good.
Yeah,
and so I'd like always be so jealous that you got to go out and have a guy's night.
And then I'd be home. I remember coming back and being
every week.
So we went and got gelato after our meeting, and you'd be like, what? Like, I want gelato. So I'd always be sure to bring you some gelato. But it was like, sometimes we'd like be like, hey, the gelato place is still open. Let's go. You know, it was just down the street around the corner. And so we'd go, but I'd be like, oh no, like, I'm having this great, like, boys night in Alana's home on her 15th cycle of Toy Story 2. Right?
So we got to do, you know, you got to do your girls' nights too.
And so, but not my girls' night, my boys' night.
No, like,
oh,
we,
you, oh, you're
we
saying,
as right. you know, like, the spouses, we need to do,
right.
you know, we need to do things too.
Yeah, you have to be proactive about it. They don't, because the thing with serving these callings is, like, we just naturally end up in a room together, like, in for our meetings, but the wives don't naturally end up in rooms together. So you have to be proactive about it.
Yeah, I was always so jealous. You always got this guy's night every week.
Right. Yeah. And that's what it can look like. We can feed into resentment for that wife. It's like, man, you get to go hang out with the boys, even though it's an official meeting.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know? And so you have to be intentional about that. So connection is so crucial. I can't emphasize it enough. And I think I would just add to that, like, finding, you know, you don't need to find, like, a best friend connections. You know, that's important. But also just, like, you as the bishop's wife, like, there's certain people you can connect with that they, in the ward, it may be sisters in the ward that think, wow, you know, I was sitting by myself and the bishop's wife came and sat next to me. Like, you're almost the symbol of the bishop, right? Yeah. A representation of the bishop in female form, right? And so,
or state presidency member or any other.
So that connection you can have with especially the women in the ward, of just sitting and talking, connecting with others, like, that goes a long way when you have the unofficial calling of bishop's wife.
Right? Yeah. Easier said than done, but, you know, in some circumstances,
I would always try, this is another random best practice, but I would always try and be intentional, like, after sacrament meeting, like, taking our child. I remember several Sundays, like, wrestling Devery in the hallway as you were, like, just enjoying gospel doctrine or enjoying Relief Society, right? Like, I try to be intentional of taking the child at that point and, you know, being a dad at church and letting you enjoy church, because I got a lot of spiritual nourishment. Like I said, it was served to me on a platter. Like, here it is, some incredible spiritual experiences. Take it. Where you, we really had to make sure that you got that.
Yeah. I do remember that. So you doing that.
Nice. All right. So here's a big one. So this last one you put is intense when you said, sometimes it's hard and that's okay.
Yeah.
Expound.
Well, it's something that I just learned recently. I'm in a coaching program with Jody Moore, which she was actually on the podcast.
Yeah, great episode. Check it out.
Earlier. Yeah, really
good
episode.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
I'm in the episode too.
That's right. She does the intro and outro.
So if you haven't listened to that one, go back and listen to it. But I'm in her coaching program. And so this is something I've learned recently. Just was enlightened with, but, you know, like.
And I'm just going to say, like, every bishop's wife needs to subscribe to the Jody Moore podcast. Like, this is going to do miracles for you during that time. If you're not familiar with Jody Moore, it will bless your life by having that weekly podcast episode along with the Leading Saints podcast as well. Obviously, that goes without saying. But anyways, continue.
Yeah, for sure. I actually didn't start listening to her until, like, right after we moved, right after you got released. And I'm like, I could totally have used this content when you were serving in the state presidency, but I didn't have it then, but so wasn't meant to be. But yeah, it's okay to like, I don't know. I just like that thought.
It's okay to complain.
Yeah. It's.
And I think this comes from we've all been in this meeting. If you haven't been there, you will be at some point in your life where maybe there is a certain leader that's maybe been released or currently serving, and he stands up and he says something like, you know, after all these years of serving in leadership, my wife has never once complained. And
then there's
90% of the women in the room are like, oh my goodness, I complain every single week. Like, and again, this isn't like public complaining, but just like at home, like there were many times that you would get, many times it was sort of in one of these funks where you were just like, I resent you. I resent the calling. I resent the stake president for calling you. I resent, you know, I resent the Lord for calling you. I resent, right? You just would. And so you just had, it would not have been helpful to keep that in and just let it build. That would not have been a good. So it's okay to open up and complain, right?
Yeah.
But I think just in short, it's good for someone to give you permission to complain. And you don't have to be the constantly smiling bishop's wife that has her life put together and that you can't show any weakness or mortality because you're the bishop's wife. Like the best bishop's wives are the real bishop's wives, right? That can relate to others. And so it's okay to complain. And I'm sure many of those.
I don't know necessarily like complain is the right word, but just like, it's okay to be sad. It's okay to, you know, want your husband to be there that night and he's not. And it's okay that it's hard. Like we're, love that we're down here in mortality to experience things and to grow and to, and we all have our own journey of growth and that looks like, and to, we have to experience hard things to experience the really joyful things. And some of the, you know, like there's so many sweet moments too of that we've had together serving, you know, because of your experiences serving and our experiences serving.
And a lot of these things that you just talked about are that you've learned how to articulate from the content you've learned from Jody Moore, right? Anything else that you would say? Because it all goes back to this concept of like, the feeling is not a bad thing. Like the feeling exists, recognize it, and you're not a bad person. Like that feeling doesn't define you. And you need to process that feeling, right? Anything you'd add to that, those concepts that you've learned from her?
Not unless we did a whole podcast interview. So
hey, the kids are asleep, we got time here, so but anything else that you'd add to it that like to just help people start to understand that concept and give them permission to feel that way?
Well, a lot of time, instead of, you know, just pushing away the sadness or the overwhelm, to just feel it, and you know, what does that feel in your body? And a lot of times it will, and just be really aware of the way you're feeling. And a lot of times that really helps, like it will help dissipate it.
I think generally speaking, it's just, it's so easy to feel certain feelings of like, of sometimes it's resentment, sometimes it's frustration, sometimes it's anger. And then the shame follows after that. Like, oh, I'm the bishop's wife. Like this is a blessing for our family. I shouldn't feel this way. Right. And so you like push it away, but in reality, you're just burying it and you're not talking about it, but it's such a blessing for your husband to come home and say, I'm just going through a phase where I'm resenting the calling right now. Can we talk about that? And hopefully he's created a safe place that he's like, what do you mean you're resenting the calling? Like this is, the Lord has called us to serve in this capacity and you should like it. Okay. And if you don't like, you know, to perpetuate that shame. And so hopefully you can have just real conversations like that as a couple. And I don't think I did this very well back then, but I've come a long way and it helps to do 300 plus leadership interviews and you become a different person when that happens. But to just to have those conversations and just make that, bring the bishop's office home. And just say, wow, tell me about that. What's that like, right? Empathy, reflection, trying to connect with that person and not to fix them, but just to understand what they're feeling. And oftentimes, that's the bishop's wife that needs the bishop's office most of all. And the beauty is that she has a bishop's office in their house and it's got a couch in it. It's much more comfortable. Anyway, so, well, this has been great, my dear. And I'm so excited that we have this episode recorded. And I have one more question for you, obviously, but any general message that you would have for the Leading Saints audience that that you have to sometimes share your husband with?
Yeah, this is just another calling. Right. That's also a family calling for sure. So it's so fun when Kurt will come to me and say, hey, you got to listen to this email that I got. And how was your, you know, so the emails that you guys are sending of encouraging and feedback, I also hear some of those too. And it keeps us both going. And it's also great when I get to talk to some of the listeners in person. And when you tell us how much you love to listen, it's awesome. I got to meet Noelle at the leadership conference and it was so fun to talk to her. So if Noelle, you're listening, hello. So we like that communication.
All right. My last question for you, which I often ask in these How I Lead episodes, is as you reflect back on your time as the bishop's wife or the wife of a member of the state presidency, how has that leadership role made you a better follower of Jesus Christ?
I love that I am living in these latter days and I'm living in this time period where the restored gospel is on the earth. And because we have these opportunities to become more like our Savior, and we have opportunities right in front of us to follow Him. And to have that right in front of us, I feel like it's such a blessing. And I'm grateful to be able to see what the atonement and what He has done for us helps others. And there's been a few times where you've articulated to me how it's helped those that you have met with. And that's been a huge growing experience to hear those experiences that you've had and has helped my testimony and helped me gain a more of a firmer testimony of Him and how because of Him, we all have hope and we can all be comforted. And our Jesus Christ knows how we all are feeling and He has experienced everything that we have and He understands. And then to be able to be one of His tools is such a great experience.
And that concludes my interview with my sweetheart, Alana Frankham. I hope you benefited from this content. If you know of another wife of a leader or a husband of a leader, whomever it is, that maybe has a unique perspective when it comes to being married to the leader and the perspective that would maybe help other leaders be better prepared to take on these family callings, as we talked about, I would love to connect with that person. So go to leadingsaints.org/contact and send me a message. Let me know who I should talk to and reach out to. Like I mentioned, we have a survey, a list of potential interviewees here that I'm excited to jump into. There are some fantastic stories. And so look for that in the coming weeks of other interviews with wives of bishops, and hopefully we can create some content that will help the wife that's out there that maybe is struggling a little bit with her husband serving in these callings. And we pray for you, we recognize you, we see you, and we want you to have hope in serving in this role, because I promise you, I've seen the change for good that it's had in my wife, and I have no doubt it will change you for the better. And don't forget, visit our product store at leadingsaints.org and check out the 2019 Ward calendar. And remember, be a leader, not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. When the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.